Whether you're standing, sitting, just bring yourself to a pause. And one of the most beautiful things about yoga is that ability to slow down and create that space for yourself to connect in. So just by the simple action of pausing is often enough. So we're going to just pause. And I want you to take a minute to take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth, relax your shoulders. I want you to just experience your breath. Just notice the breath as it moves through. See if you can hear the sound that your breath makes. I often like to hear of it as the sound of the ocean. And just take a little body scan and notice how the body's feeling right now. All the way from your feet, moving up through your ankles and your calves, your knees, into the thighs and the hips, the lower abdomen and the belly. You can start to notice your lower back moving up into your solar plexus, right at your center, up into your heart, through your shoulders, your arms, out through the fingertips. You can notice the neck and the back of the head, the jaws, the lips, your nose, your cheekbones, your eyes, your eyebrows, your forehead, the crown, the very top of your head. And then take a deep breath into the whole body. Knowing that you're enough exactly as you are, that nothing needs to be added to you or taken from you, and that right now and right here is exactly where you belong, exactly where you need to be. This is an exercise that you can do at any time, you know, and just taking a pause. And something that I've really been working on and thinking about a lot is just slowing down. You know, I find myself moving around at a million miles an hour, trying to get a million things done. And, you know, you get scattered in the process of that, and slowing down and just really remembering, like, my own craft. When you offer your craft to people, you know, you can sometimes get disconnected from it in the sense that you yourself are not in the practice as much. And so right now I'm really in the practice of slowing down, like truly, truly slowing down, taking a breath, taking a moment to check in and figure out what is the next thing, and really having a focus and being present. So I like that little mini meditation there, because it doesn't take a long time. It's just stopping, literally maybe even 60 seconds, and just checking in for a second. So feel free to rewind, listen to it again, or, you know, just create your own version of that whenever you need that time to just slow down.
I am your host, Taryn Burke, and you are listening to The Witch's Muse, Stories Beneath the Surface, where initiation and inspiration meet, and we explore the many facets of being human. Our work in the world matters. Let's talk about it. On this episode of The Witch's Muse, I speak to Angie of Afro Yoga. I became really inspired by Angie's work, actually, through a lot of her recommendations on self-care and some of the things that she uses for self-care. And when we kind of got to talking, it was an instant connection that felt really genuine and authentic. And what really struck me is how Angie has really made a serious and sacred project in inspiring and creating the movement that is Afro Yoga. And with so much being commercialized in wellness and in yoga these days, I felt it was really important to have a strength card from a yogi and a yogini at that. And so I myself have practiced yoga, and I've been a practitioner for almost a decade and a teacher for about 5 years. And it's not something I normally share on my page or my channels much, because I'm still kind of navigating what my role is as a yoga teacher and the cultural exchange practice that happens there. And really, as I uncover more of what cultural appropriation looks like and means, just being really, really, really transparent in how I'm offering yoga and in what ways and what I'm giving recognition to and what I'm honoring and what I'm not profiting from. Because to say that I don't make money off yoga isn't true. So I have a profit off of teaching yoga, and I just felt really deeply to get Angie's piece, because I think there's so much in movement practices and in wellness practices that come from an idea of access and what access looks like to people and specifically marginalized communities and folks of color, and how people get access to something that I think is a basic right, such as personal wellness, self-care, and movement alchemy. So stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy the Strength Card, episode 8 of The Witch's Muse, featuring Angie of Afro Yoga. Since Afro Yoga came on the scene in August 2017, it's been a trailblazing movement created out of inspiration to hold spaces for people of color to be represented in the wellness community. Afro Yoga became more than just a yoga class. It's a movement. Angie Franklin has given and spoken and talked to and instructed a number of regular and new students attending classes, and she continues to partner with local organizations and businesses to bring Afro Yoga to undeserved communities. She's partnered and offered Afro Yoga classes to the Black Student Union at Sacramento State University, at the University of Pacific Sacramento campus with South Restaurant for Afro Yoga Brunch, and held Train the Trainer workshops for Black Infant Health of the Health and Human Services Department. She collaborates with The Proud Show to highlight local businesses and individuals of color, and has have upcoming collaborations with Activism Articulated, Lululemon Athletica, Mack Road Valley High, Community Center, Soul Sister Shakti, and more. Her goal for the foreseeable future is to bring donation-based yoga classes throughout Sacramento that center women of color. She will also be working to get grants and funding to open an Afro Yoga studio and collaborate with local leaders and organizations to further the work of social justice and racial equity in the wellness community. Whoa, amazing. I was like, you sound so good. And you, I just like the foremost thing in my mind, and why I feel like the call for the strength card, like you were just like envisioned into my mind, not one because I think you have a lioness quality, just in the interactions that I've seen with you on social media, just a fierceness. And I'm even gonna kind of quote a quote you mentioned about spiritual fierceness from some past article you've done, but just this quote from Naraya Waheed, and I think I'm saying her name right, is where you are is not who you are, and that's circumstances. And I think so much of the work that you're doing is it's based on so much more than just the physical. You're like expanding all of these different realms of strength and resilience and social justice. And so it's more than just where you're at. It's just, it goes beyond that. And so I wanted to really represent that. And also this quote that Angie says before we kick off the first question about spiritual fierceness, which I just feel like in relationship to the card of strength, which is not a card that's really representative of physical strength. It's about our internal strength and compassion for ourselves and for others. And so Angie describes freedom as the ability to be spiritually fierce, so connected to myself that I can develop mastery over myself, and no outside force, person, comment, subliminal messages, or otherwise can deserve my peace of mind and path. And that in itself, just the spiritual fierceness, is so much of what this card represents. And so I'm really glad to have Angie here to speak about strength in her work and the work she does with Afro Yoga. So the first question, as I'll kind of allow it to come off, is, Angie, what's the soul question that keeps you up at night? And that can be also translated into, what's a soul question for you that you carry? Or is there something that you are deeply curious or tracking at this time in your life?
That's a deep question. That is a really deep question. You know, when I think about when I'm up at night, when I'm literally up at night and my mind is racing and I'm thinking about all these different things, it all is surrounded around, what else can I do? What can I create? What can I offer to my community that's going to be valuable for them? And I think that for me is always the question, is what can I do that's going to be of real, true value in an offering that's practical, that's realistic to my community? And so I'm constantly thinking about the ways that I can do that, because I've always been a progressive person in terms of like wanting to grow and move things forward. I never really have that quality of stagnation. I mean, we all have our downturns and there's times where you get caught in a slump, but you know, for the most part, I'm always thinking about what's the next step, what's the next thing I can do. And Afro Yoga's now been a year, you know, just about a year. And so much has happened in that amount of time. It's really kind of crazy. But, you know, I think about what else, you know, can I do for my community and for people to really be able to get the benefits of yoga and meditation, and to find inspiration to continue to practice that, because it is a practice. It's a practice. It's something that you have to practice at, just like a basketball practice or whatever other kind of practice. It's something that you have to do continuously to develop into your own character, right? And so it's like, how do I make sure that people are regularly attending class? How do I keep people engaged? How do I give them information, nuggets, whatever, to inspire them to continue the work? Because being a person of color is really isolating. And so what's been cool in this community is that we can come together and feel connected and feel represented in the spaces when we come together to do yoga, to meditate, or whatever the events that I have. So, you know, that's really unique. But to be able to maintain sort of that sense of community when you're at home by yourself, or like still feel connected to a movement, is really difficult. And so I send out a weekly newsletter with a lot of information, and I've revamped it so that there's more information that's coming out just to support people in their journey. And everybody's going to be in a different place, you know, on that journey. But what I really want people to know is that this is a free tool, something that they have access to that's already within them, that is just a matter of cultivating it. And I was actually, I just got back from Europe and I was on a 12-hour plane ride. So I was listening to some podcasts myself. And I listened to one from Black Girl in Ohm, where they did an interview with Koya Webb, who's also a yoga teacher. And she has this Get Loved Up, you know, concept and business brand. And I was so inspired by what I heard from her and her own journey to loving herself. And one of the things that I've been really thinking about of my own soul question, I guess, to myself, is like, the best way for me to figure out what my audience needs or what I can do for them is to actually be fully in the practice myself. Like, to be making sure I'm practicing every day, to be making sure that I'm doing those steps and doing those things, the same things that I want to guide other people to. I need to be living that in order to really understand, because then I'll know what that process is like and what the challenges are and what the hurdles are and how, what are the steps to overcome those things. And although, you know, I have a theoretical understanding of what those things are, right? But until you actually go through yourself, it's not the same, you know? And so I think coming back to that, because I've gotten so caught up in like that thought process at night that keeps me up of like, what else can I do and what can I create and who can I contact? And I want to write a book and I want to do this and I want to do that. And although, you know, organizing thoughts around progression is important, it comes back to that slowing down of like, what's most important right now? And that is me being in the practice of whatever it is that I'm trying to guide people towards every single day. So that's kind of where I'm at right now and what I'm thinking about. And, you know, I think it's important to be vulnerable and honest. Somebody might think, oh, well, you're a yoga teacher, so, you know, you can do, I don't know, you can do crazy poses, or, you know how to calm your mind, or, you know, it doesn't mean that because I'm a teacher of this practice that I don't struggle with the same things that I teach people struggle with. And so, so again, going back to just like the concept of something like a Gandhi quote, you know, you have to be the change that you wish to see in the world. And so I've been thinking to myself, what is that change that I want to see in the world? And how, you know, what steps do I take to reflect that change? And so for me right now is, you know, committing to a daily meditation practice at a specific time. And that's really my first thing. I wrote an email and I had a couple of steps, but that was one of the first things. Also, waking up and, you know, spending the first few minutes just being grateful, spending some time on gratitude and connecting with breath before I check my phone or start doing all of that. So just back to that process of slowing down and really connecting. And that's my own soul question to myself, and also the thing that I wish to impart for others in their own practice and in their own journey to wellness.
Yeah, I can't agree more with the practice and personal choice to have purpose over productivity. I can't agree more. And it comes down to, I recently have chosen to do the podcast every other week because there was this part of me that was like super excited to get it out. And I wanted to get it in as many people's hands as possible. And I felt like I was doing, you know, if I didn't get it out every week, like there would be less change made in the world, or like, and you know, I really like grew my narrative or my story of what that would be. And, you know, I was talking to Sonyu, who's this word witch. She's an amazing woman, and she does these kind of accountability kind of coaching sessions. And she sits there and she's like, so why do you think this? Why do you think less people are going to be less touched because you choose to do it every other week? As it, just this idea of where my mind was able to just like carry me into this kind of false pretense of what it was, you know? And so like resonating with you saying that, and also living into this, you know, you have to live into what you teach. And as a yoga teacher, I also resonate with like a lot of people thinking, well, you're the yoga teacher, so you're like not going to have any of these problems. And I'm like, well, actually, sometimes I smoke tobacco and cannabis together and watch really shitty television. Like that's like a real thing. And, you know, I like grew up in TV culture. I was like an only child after school kid, like point blank, who didn't have like Waldorf to whatever random chart. Like I was a public school kid, and you know, I just grew up in a different world. And so noticing that it's so a reminder for me, especially with like things like divination and playing with witchcraft and magic and tarot and just somatic healing, so much of it comes back of how I'm using that time in my own practice, because then it gets me more clear on what I'm offering. So I love what you said about that. And, you know, I got this amazing imagery that came up of the garden to grow the seeds. And it totally seems like you're planting just like a really vibrant garden. And your garden is just like, you got like so many flowers that you're like, okay, I got a lot of flowers, but I'm like going to hold off to pick the entire bouquet because I got, you know, summer in this season, some come up in this season, like, and those cycles. And so I just got this imagery of just like an amazing kind of flower garden. So, yeah, and I like, you mentioned Black Girl in Ohm, and I'm going to make sure to link that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, dude, their shit is on point. Such a great podcast. Lauren Ash and Dion Ivory, which are the hosts and the founders of it, and they are definitely have been trailblazing in this wellness movement for Black women. I actually didn't really, somebody had mentioned them to me when I first was starting Afro Yoga. I didn't really know a whole lot about them, but then I got in tune with their podcast, and I was like, oh shit, like we're doing the same work, like, you know, it's really cool. And I've since found, you know, other folks who are doing similar type of work, which is really great. You know, it's certainly a movement that's picking up. And like Black and brown consciousness in terms of, you know, wellness and needing to reclaim that is really, really prevalent right now. And it's beautiful to see that. There's so much more awareness around, you know, nutrition and food and yoga and meditation and all these things that are so good for us to practice that have not been targeted to our communities. And so it's great to be able to do these things, especially in at-risk areas or for underserved populations, because, you know, they need it. We need it. We need it so much. And so it's great to see other people in the movement and the waves that they're making, because it's also like, yeah, you know, like they're doing big things. And so it gives for me, like, I also have obviously a lot of my own business aspirations of where I want to reach to. Cause it's, you know, you have that social piece, but you also have that real life business. I want to make a living from this, and how to balance those things out. So, but yeah, so it's good to see.
Which also feels like at the forefront of the movement of like, not just serving communities, serving the movement, but like serving yourself and like allowing Black and brown women to be on the front line of a wellness movement, which it's about damn time to giving that like forefront and platform and allowing that to be what it is, because, you know, there's so much sacred wisdom from the backgrounds of Black and brown women and, you know, on the backs of Black and brown women. So I think for me, it's for really acknowledging that. And that goes to, and it's like a great segue question of just the origin story of Afro yoga and, just how it came about, like why Afro yoga, like was there, you know, I always ask people this, was there a certain experience or turning point that you're like, okay, this is this point in time? It might have not been like a pinpoint, but was there a feeling or can you remember an experience that you were like, okay, like this is my gift I'm going to offer and make visible to the world?
Oh man, that is such a layered, it's a layered story. So, I'll try to break it down in the best way possible. So as soon as I kind of fell into my yoga teacher training, I was overseas in Spain at the time, a little bit before I ended up in that training, and had gone through a rough time there. I went there, I actually moved there, and I'm from Spain, so it wasn't like a completely crazy move. Like, I was born there. I came here when I was 7, but have a ton of family there, which is who I just visited recently. But, you know, it was a tough time. I was there alone, and I kind of went with just not really a solid plan. It was just like, I'm just, you know, on that free-spirited 20-something shit, like, whatever, I'm quitting my job, I'm selling my stuff, and I'm going to move and figure it out. It wasn't a very solid plan, and not saying, like, some of that has worked out for me before, but I feel like I was able to pinpoint some missteps in that transition. But bottom line is that I was in a really deep depression at that time, and I watched a movie called Awake, because Netflix was like the only thing at that time that was of any joy really for me other than croissants and coffee. And so I watched that movie Awake, and about Paramahansa Yogananda, an ancient sage from the East who you know was one of the major like conduits of yoga coming to the West. And I was really inspired, and it kind of brought me back to a lot of the spiritual studies and all that that I had done previously, and started to reconnect me back to myself. Because I kind of had become somebody that I didn't even recognize to myself at that time. So that kind of connected me back in and like, hey, remember this? And so I started to practice the little bit of yoga that I knew, because I had taken some in college, which was like your basic sun salutation or whatever. And so that kind of became like the thing that started to, you know, get me energized. I was moving around a little bit more. And it was something that I looked forward to. And so I ended up deciding to come back to SAC, which was a tough decision, because I kind of left feeling a bit defeated. But it was, that was kind of like an ego thing. Like, you know, like you failed, or people are going to look at you a certain way because you've come back. And that was really my own stuff. And so I'm so glad that I was able to get over that, because coming back was one of the best things that I could have done at that time. So I came back, started practicing yoga in a studio for the first time. This is early 2016, I think, early 2016. And so I had this sort of transcendental experience in a yoga class, in a hot yoga class. And the instructor was speaking something around, you know, like letting go of expectations, or just like, just, it was a challenging pose. And so it was really difficult, whatever the pose that we were in, and I was struggling, you know, and she said something that like completely melted me down. It was just like, all right, like I'm in this shape, like maybe I'm going to hold it, maybe I'm not, maybe I'm going to fall, maybe I'm not, but I'm here and I'm just going to be at ease with what's happening right now. And it was like a break open moment for me, like, whoa. And so it was, there was a moment of like this pure bliss state, and not something I had experienced many times other than like a deep meditation or whatever. And so I left that day and I was like, whoa, like this is, there's some deep shit going on in this. And so, so I was really intrigued, and, you know, and then shortly after, a friend of mine who was working at the front desk of a yoga studio told me that the studio was having teacher training and they were offering scholarships or whatever. And so I applied, got a partial scholarship, and ended up going to the training. Had never been to the studio before, had no idea what I was getting into, like, at all, you know, like I really didn't know at all, like what that experience was going to be. And so, so I went, and it was the most challenging and most rewarding experience that I have ever had. It's the only thing that I can say in my life that I ever truly, truly considered quitting, like leaving, like not coming back. And sure, I've had jobs and I'm like, fuck this job, you know what I mean? But I've never walked out on a job. Like I've never, you know, I've quit a job, but like this was different. This was like me giving up. That's the feeling that I had, like, this is too hard and I want to give up. And that's not something that I had ever felt before. And I talked to my spiritual teachers and they encouraged me to hang in there. And it's just because a lot of stuff was coming up. You know, when you're in a yoga teacher training, depending on the type of training that you take, but this one in particular was really, really hinged upon getting to really know your raw, authentic self, like who you really are, with all the cobwebs and the darkness and all of it, and all the good stuff too, but like to really look deep into the crevices of stuff that maybe you hadn't looked at in a very, very, very long time, or maybe ever. And for all that to be up at once, and also to be with four other people who were also experiencing the same thing, was really at times overwhelming. And so it was this concept of like, you have to be raw and authentic with yourself in order to be present to teach other people, and to, and going back to sort of that, you have to be that example first kind of a thing. Same concept. So I stuck through the training and it was totally transformative. And I knew after that training that yoga was like the thing for me, because I had been involved in, and still am, in like metaphysical and parapsychological studies since like a very, very young age, since like introduced to that stuff since like 9 years old, you know? So spirituality was something that I was very comfortable with and something that I have been exploring for a while. So for me, yoga became like this physical sort of embodiment of these spiritual principles. And so it was like, amazing for me because I'm very mentally, you know, I'm very heady. And so getting on my practice and feeling out my body is super grounding for me. So it was just like, man, this is like this perfect thing. Like, I can't believe that this exists, you know? And so it was really dope to be able to combine these two things together. It helped me work through anxiety, helped me work through depression, helped me work through different types of emotional blockages. But also, you know, just a reminder of being connected to that spiritual part of myself. And so I knew that this was going to be a great way for me to share the beauty of like the spiritual connection that can often feel very intimidating for people when you come from a place of like spiritual practice or this or that. But yoga has this really cool way of discerning it, but it becomes like this all-encompassing sort of umbrella of different things. And so you can sneak in your little seeds of wisdom and your little and not like in a sly way, like, ooh, I'm going to try to convert someone or anything like that. It's just a matter of introducing a universal principle to someone through a practice that in the West we look at as really being a physical practice, but in the East was really all about getting to a point of meditation. If you look at the eight limbs of yoga, it's all about the end point. Limb eight is samadhi, pure enlightenment, bliss, you know, complete understanding of self. And so all of the things that happen before that, including the physical yoga practice, are all agents by which to get there, to achieve that. And so a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, understanding yoga from that perspective by going through that teacher training was able to give me that knowledge. And just felt truly connected to what already felt very true and real for me. So that's like me realizing that yoga was the thing that I needed to do. And then, you know, fast forward a year after that, several different things occurring. I was just teaching yoga in different places, you know, corporate yoga and yoga at Sac State, at the university and stuff. But I hadn't really found a niche for what I was doing, nor did I really think about, like, you know, I didn't have that in my mind at the time. And then last year, around this time, I was sitting actually right here at this very same spot at my table. And I knew I wanted to do a class in the park, something yoga in the park. And I couldn't, you know, finalize. Like, I had made some flyers, but it didn't feel right. And then it just kind of dropped in, like, boom, Afro yoga. It just dropped in on me. It was like a download. It's, you know, probably one of my guides or something, like, bing, here's this. And from there, I just created a Facebook event. And that first class that we had, I posted the event, and 10 days later, we actually had it. And it was like 60 people showed up to the class. It was insane. It was insane.
Wow, Angie, that's amazing. 60 in a park? That is incredible. Which speaks to
all women of color.
You doing the work doing you, and then now noticing that the people will come because they know like how important the work is for them, and then being able to see how you're living into it. It's like, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, just there's not many times that as women of color, we are gathered with that many other women of color, especially in the name of wellness, in the name of self-care, in the name of self-love, in the name of community, in the name of sisterhood, in the name of supporting each other in this positive way. That doesn't happen often. And so I had so many people just come up and thank me. And granted, we had all kinds of little technical issues that first time around. Mic wasn't loud enough. There was like people all the way in the back. They didn't know what they couldn't, you know, they're just looking at other people to follow along because they can't hear me. And so all of that stuff, right? Like the first day type
of thing. All part of the yoga path, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. And so, but it was beautiful. Some women cried. Like, it's that healing of an experience, is that powerful of an experience for people to be able to, for you to look to your left, to look to your right, or look in front of you and see an afro, or see a head wrap, or see, smell shea butter, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a common experience. And so it was a beautiful thing to see. And from that point, I was like, oh shit, it's a movement. And that's when that kind of clicked in all the way, like, oh, wow, okay, this is there's something to this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to speak to it in the reference of one, women of color have not gotten together enough for in the name of wellness. And I think that is like such an important kind of like expression and statement to make, because, you know, in the world we're living of white supremacy and the narrative of like white heteronormative, like we are living in gathering against or fighting for or the justice of, and those are all amazing, supportive, necessary, resilient causes. And what it is to show up just in the name of like self-love and self-reverence and personal care, and just noticing how that is just a gift of just women having that, like that has its own resilience, its own power, and having that happen more and more. And again, the difference between it being, because that's definitely not a yoga class. A yoga class is like 15 people. That's a movement. And I think that, you know, it speaks to, you know, going off a little bit of the strength card, I mentioned it is just like so much of, I was just connecting with someone about this, the difference between motivation and will. So one can be motivated to do something, to kind of notice that it needs to get done, to feel amount of like, I'd say like gusto or energy to kind of move it forward. But the will to do something comes on, for me, in my opinion, someone's like personal value, their investment, their like sacred contract to, it's something that they, you know, won't negotiate away from. Like it is this is my contract, you know, and this is what I stand for and the values of that. And, you know, having all those women gather together, like in the name of one, self-care, in the name of yoga, in the name of their ability to also come together and be in like mind and be in sisterhood for brown and black women, I think is just so amazing and speaks to the strength and the sheer resilience of the movement. And I want to, you know, you have a lot of great quotes. And so I did some amazing digging, and another quote that came through for me, which I thought was amazing. And I think goes to the embrace of one, the challenges that I think in terms of access. And I think is again, all the more reason why I find Afro yoga so important is the way that wellness has been commodified in our Western world. I mean, we live in capitalism, so everything has to come with a price in a lot of ways. And so even down to energy and emotion and spirituality. And so why it's so important to notice the internal compass and the strength to overcome those obstacles and those navigations of like societal, like you need to have this in order to be this way. Like I mentioned a little bit with you in the questions, and we'll get into it more, but like, you know, spiritual capitalism is a real thing and it's so sneaky, and that's why it's so real, because it is, it's just this like small little subliminal notes that you don't even realize, I don't even realize are happening. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, what? And it just kind of gazes over me. So a quote you say here, and it's back from, I think, an article that you might have done or an interview. It's, don't resist the changes happening in your life. Embrace it, trust us, and keep putting one foot in front of the other. Keep the faith, y'all. Breathe, take care of yourself, and smile. Even when shit gets hard, there's infinite amount of things to be grateful for. And I think it speaks to, one, the ability to, through it all, like literally through it all, ancestral, energetic, past, there's still this amount of infant compassion and potential in Afro yoga and the work you do. Because you're coming from a place of gratitude. You're coming from a place of love. You're coming from a place of compassion. And that idea of taking care of yourself, you know, first and foremost, like it being a practice of care. So I'm curious, you know, from the work. And again, talking about yoga in the West, talking about yoga for women of color, like how does something like the strength card or the idea of internal strength show up in your life? What does strength mean to you? Whether it's the word, you know, you could totally break down the word strength, and what ways it's shaped your life practice. Like for me, I've really been making strength and resilience a little bit autonomous. Like they've been a little bit more of a similar like definition for me when I've started to look at strength. And I've also really started to court, and you mentioned this too, the strength in kind of stillness and the strength in softness is kind of a whole new thing that I'm kind of exploring for myself. So yeah, just, you know, what does strength, you know, whether it's the word or the emotion or the feeling or the experience, what does it mean to you, and in what ways has it shaped your yoga practice? Has it shaped your life practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. Man, I feel like, especially for the Black community and maybe even the brown community, I mean, I'm Hispanic as well, from Spain, but that culture is a little bit different from brown community here, which is more, I think, rooted in Mexican culture and whatnot. So I don't have as much leverage on that to speak about that specifically. But like, I feel like for the Black community, which I have a lot of experience with, strength has been defined by your ability to suppress, by the ability to like how much you can hold in without letting it out, you know? And I've never really been good at that, you know? It's funny because people always tell me that I'm strong in this and that, and I don't always feel that way because I am an emotional creature, and I do cry. I do have my ups and downs. I have all of those things. But I think strength for me specifically is about how you deal with life's challenges, like, you know, how you pick yourself back up. For me, strength has shown up in like how I pick up the pieces of myself when shit goes raw, when shit goes sideways, when I don't feel good about myself, when I make mistakes, etc. Like being able to draw on something within me that's like, you know, this situation doesn't define you, but what can you learn from this to be better? So for me, strength is really about like how you move from a situation and how you make that situation make you better, how you make that situation elevate you and bring you to a next level, and giving yourself space to make mistakes and to also to acknowledge, like, it's really difficult to see yourself. And this full moon eclipse recently, this last Friday, was a really strong one for me and showed me some stuff about myself that I was like, damn, you really need to get this shit together. And it was difficult for me to look at myself in that light. Like, that's difficult. And I think that that's also part of strength, is to be able to be real with yourself and to break down an image that you thought you had of yourself. You know, like we look at ourselves in certain ways and we see ourselves in a certain light, and it's very difficult, unless shit hits the fan, to be able to see another image than that, even when somebody else tells you. And so being able to actually really, really be like, damn, you know, I fucked up, and maybe I did it more than once, and I really need to, what can I do? What is the next step for me to start to move into this practice, so that whatever that practice is, like I said, for me right now, it's like, you know, committing to a meditation every day, waking up with gratitude, with breath. You know, what is the very next step that I can take to start to correct this behavior, correct this specific thing? And you do have to be gentle and kind with yourself through that process. Like, I don't expect myself to do it every single day without fault, you know, but I can encourage myself and be, and remind myself why I'm doing it and what the purpose of that is. And being really, really intentional and really purposeful about my actions. And that all goes back to this concept of slowing down And that's really when I really think about what this whole practice and what all of this is about, a huge part of it is about slowing down, you know? And so for me, strength is right now for me in seeing myself clearly and taking the very next steps that I can take to improve myself. And so strength, you know, changes, but it is that resilience too. It is that sense of like, I'm not going to give up on myself. You know, I'm going to continue to work at this thing until I see the difference. I see the change that I want to see. And you know, in the yoga practice, for me, it's shown up physically as well. Like going through that teacher training, you know, I never did it for physical benefits, you know, but after that teacher training, I was like hopping out of the shower one day, like, all right, damn, look at them abs, girl. You know, like I was like, wow, I am strong. Like I look strong. Like I was in the best shape I had been in. I was practicing yoga 2-3 times, you know, at least 2 times a day for 10 days straight. You know, and my body shapes pretty quickly. So I was like, wow, you know, I think for me, it was a surprise. Like I could never do a push-up, you know, I had to do the girl push-ups with the knees or whatever. And so now I can do a bunch of them in a practice. And that was also a source of confidence for me in terms of like being able to see a change, of like not being able to do something that I thought I might never be able to do to being able to do so much of it. And I think that also is like such an encouraging thing for me and for others that really go through the yoga practice and like work to advance, is seeing like that you can create and shape and do the things, you know, within reason of your body's limitations, that you can make yourself to be whatever you want to be. You can get yourself into a handstand or to a scorpion or to whatever pose if you work hard enough at it, if you spend enough time at it. And I think it just, again, goes back to the practice of just that practice, the practice itself of actually practicing, actually spending the time, being patient with yourself and allowing it to come one day at a time, because you're not going to get into that handstand in a week. You know, it's going to take time. And it goes back again to that slowing down, being patient in the process. And that's right now what strength is really looking like for me.
Yeah. Mine comes down to the moments with like a handstand practice where there are times during the week or during the months that I can stick it for like a few seconds and my mind wants to go so crazy, but I'm still trying to like keep the form and my excitement. And then there's other months where like, I think the wall is all I'll need and that's going to be the best thing for me. And that's what's going to make it possible for me to kind of continue to explore the practice is just supporting the wall and supporting props. And I think for me as a teacher, it's the ability to know that it's okay to ask for help and support. And I try to say that as much as possible with even my props, is that it's okay to be supported, because I do think sometimes with yoga in the Western world, sometimes people look at props as crutches, you know, and I'm going off on this more so tangent of teacher to teacher, but kind of speaking to your practice of like, well, you know, the challenge and the rewarding experience comes with, you know, reintroducing ourselves to the practice, coming back time and time again. You know, I broke my leg or my ankle last summer. And that, in terms of my practice, I've been practicing on and off since I was like 16 in high school. That was the sheer moment of like my humbling to my practice. Because before I was like a completely able-bodied woman who could just like totally do a Ardha Chandrasana. I could totally do a half moon without any hesitation. You know, I had good hip mobility. I was able to just have the enough hamstring strength. I could just get into it. To not being able to balance on my good foot. It was my right foot. Not being able to do anything, having a chair, doing chair yoga, like after having been a practitioner and a yogini to then in a way becoming a complete beginner and then having to modify like just the amount of my own grace and softness became so real. And that's like, again, what again solidified the practice of the challenging experience of noticing, you know, how I deal with life's challenges, as you mentioned, and the ability to come back to the mat, which I think is all the more to kind of continue this conversation. And the strength, like to me, that ability to navigate life's challenges with grace and with softness, and also being gentle on if it's not that way. Like, you better believe I was like so pissed I had to, well, I didn't wear a boot. Like, I was so anti for the ergonomics of my hip structure that I was like, fuck it, I will like do less, or I will like literally be more bedridden and wait till I can kind of see a PT than like walk in like full walk in those boot things, because the just platform and the amount of like hip misplacement from walking on a boot like that was going to just be so hard on my body. So I, you know, there was an edge for me there of what that looked like. You know, and also, you know, as a teacher, and this, you know, I'd love to have this conversation as we move into the other questions, you know, as a teacher, you know, it's my personal responsibility to be humbled by my own practice and also humbled by others. So, you know, some people come in, depending on the studio I've taught at, and are kind of expecting me to be like a studio owner or a studio teacher, someone who I think really exemplifies a completely different practice, more of a power vinyasa or something that's more fast moment or focus on the physical. And they get such an interesting offering of awakening. Now, whether or not they want to take that invitation is entirely up to them as a student. But you definitely see people's minds be like, oh, this isn't what I signed up for. I signed up for vinyasa too. What am I doing right now? And I'm like, there's such a different invitation for me of getting past the physical and allowing people to slip into kind of their internal dialogue and their conversations with their internal struggles. 'Cause I think that's where yoga for me is valuable, and where I'm still navigating as I separate from my more traditional paths that aren't necessarily culturally mine, and I begin to explore where my path and my solidarity with yoga is in the practice of just like, yeah, staying humble, you know, navigating like a healthy ego, like the difference between healthy ego and just having an ego that's in the entire driver's seat. And, you know, the idea of santosha and contentment and all the layers, I think, of that. And so, yeah, you know, I'm speaking a little circular, but that's all good. I just want to really, really honor just the way that you're able to explore strength in the practice and how so much of it is with like being real and being raw, and then what happens in that raw state. I mean, that to me is yoga, the ability to sit in the rawness of the practice, that's not even physical, as you kind of had mentioned before. It's more than just the physical practice. It's just one limb of the many to samadhi.
Absolutely. I like what you said about humility, because that's something for me that I think I'm also like thinking a lot about in, like, I don't know everything, you know, like I know nothing, you know, in reality, I know nothing. As many things as I know nothing. And to never assume, you know, that you do know something, that's like real, that's humbling. And I think that the more that we can move into life in that way and in from a place of curiosity versus from a place of like, I know, is so different, even in just the energy that it could carry in your body. You know what I mean? Like, I know is this aggressive, sort of forceful, like, energy, and humility and curiosity is, like, gentle and soft, and you can feel in your own body, like, within the two words, like, how the difference is. I feel relaxed when I think about being curious, you know? It's it's open. It's an openness. And it gives a lot of room and a lot of opportunity. And I can think of, like, my spiritual teacher, Weston Bailey, who, as much as he knew and as much as he taught us for the many years, always said that he was no kind of authority on the subject matter. You know, and that's really powerful. And some of his last words to me before he passed was, you know, he told me to listen. He just said, like, listen, you know. And so I'm trying to also navigate that in that, you know, I think that also as a woman, a lot of my strength previously, or what I felt like was strength, was defined by, like, my ability to be seen as intellectual, to be seen as intelligent, because, you know, women have been just kind of objects for such a long time. And I know that that's old conditioning, and I get that, but that's also part of, like, this deprogramming of I don't have to show up and, like, prove that I know XYZ thing, or, like, you know, speak on a topic just because the conversation's being had, or just because I know something about it. I can sit back and figure out what I can learn and be humble and see, like, you know, listen instead of speak. And that all for me, again, circles back to slowing down, being still, and finding that grace. You know, grace is something that we talked about in a class that I had a few weeks ago, and something I've been thinking so much about, and how when I'm, like, moving fast, or when I feel like I'm in that mode of, like, being mindless, I think grace, and it just poof, like, my body language changes, my shoulders soften, and I move with more ease, and I move with purpose. And it shifts my whole presence and how I show up in a room or in a place or for myself. So strength is layered. There's so many different ways that it can be defined.
There's so many different ways. And there's so many different ways that I think it's being, like, and from your words and from mine, like, being redefined, like, especially even in the yoga world, like, we're not even looking at it in that way that's physical. And, you know, I can tell we're all in a retrograde, because, you know, both you and I have been coming back to, you know, the ease of deep listening, of slowing down, and then noticing how, like, that's what's, I think, truly needed for yoga in the West. And, you know, I'm going to get into the conversation, because we got to have it as teachers. And I'm always curious from, like, one teacher to another, and also just in experience of just, yeah, yoga in the West is a full-blown industry. I mean, it is, you know, wellness. We can even go through, we can enlarge in that scope. Wellness is becoming one of the fastest growing industries. It is just, like, skyrocketing in, you know, consumer culture. And I love to talk about it from a lens, as you being a Black woman, and your conversations around yoga in the Western culture, and also just, like, straight, again, we live in capitalism. We live in a very specific narrative, normative of, like, now that you have said industry, how can you profit the most off of it? And, you know, there's, again, layers to that. And also, I, of course, believe, as you and I both mentioned, like, we also have bills to pay. So there is an element of, like, yes, I'd love to do what I love. I'd love to have my bills met. And, of course, at the end of the day, though, finding the deep gratitude of service, how I serve, how I live from service, what I can do to show up for myself in service, and in a way then in service to others, like, first and foremost for me, that's a huge value. So yeah, so there's a bunch of questions there. One, just thoughts on, you know, yoga in Western, kind of the Western world. Also just a Black yogini. I think it's, like, so important to understand your narrative and what you're exploring and experiencing, especially with the movement of Afro yoga. And we can kind of just navigate what kind of comes out of those conversations, kind of from those couple questions first.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, we definitely do live in a capitalistic world where everything is about attracting your attention long enough to sell you something, or to make you believe that you need it. And that's difficult to navigate. You know, when I first got out of teacher training, I went to Portugal to teach yoga at a surf school. Small town, literally, like, within 10 minutes on my bike, I could circle the town. Very, very small, beautiful, bordered the south and the west. It's the southern, southwesternmost point of Europe, a little town called Sagres. And it was the most, it was the most simple life I had ever lived. It was just, like, me riding my bike. I'd go teach a yoga class, help the guys pack the lunches, load the surfboards, find waves, take pictures of people on the beach, go home, you know, make, eat something, go to the bar that night, whatever, do it all over again, right? Or go to the beach or do whatever. And, like, I would wear the same shorts, like, 2 or 3 days in a row, or, like, same bathing. Like, no one cared. Like, that wasn't important. You know, what shoes you wore or whatever. We were there for the waves. We were there for, you know, for the yoga. Like, it was just really pure. And so coming back from that, being there for 3 months, coming back from that, I felt inundated with, like, it was the first time that I had experienced that, like, I felt, like, disgusted driving down the street. It's like everything's for sale, you know? It felt really, like, gross to me. And I tried my best to, like, hang on to that little bit of life, like, riding my bike still to places. I'm, like, sweating, riding to Starbucks. It's, like, 2 miles away. I'm, like, whatever, you know, it's in my same socks and shoes, you know what I mean? Whatever. And, you know, obviously that wasn't sustainable for me at that time, but, like, I tried to hang on to as much of that life as I could. And, you know, eventually that fades because you have to deal with what you're in. And so I think that, you know, knowing the society in which you live, like, having that awareness of, like, this is what surrounds me, this is what I'm up against. And I think that when you have at least that understanding, you can really check yourself of, like, well, do I really need to impulsively buy these yoga pants, or do I really need to impulsively buy this curtain for my house? Like, you know, and I spend a lot of time, like, with people from other countries. My boyfriend is Guyanese. He's from South America. And he keeps me really grounded in some of that because he's very practical, doesn't spend money that doesn't need to be spent. You know, he's just, their values are so different. And coming from a place where there's a lot of poverty and there's not room for something like a potato peeler, you know, like, they don't have stuff like that. They use a knife. You know what I mean? Like, that's a luxury to have a potato peeler, for example. And so it's very balancing. So I think also, like, not only having an awareness of the place in which you live and how, what it aims to do, and how it moves so that you can move differently within it, but, like, having connections with people and with who can keep you grounded, and whether, and what, and maybe you're in a place where that doesn't really exist, watch some documentaries or, like, you know, see how other people are living to keep you balanced and in check, because it can be really easy to be in this Western world and feel like there's nothing outside of it, or you're so sucked into it where it's just like, this is it. Which is why I encourage people to travel so much and why I love traveling, especially abroad. So I think that really, as far as capitalism goes in general, it's like, you got to just know what you're up against and then decide otherwise. Like, don't do what they're selling you to do, you know, save, you know, eat out, but not every, you know, once a week, or, like, try to keep yourself within reason and realize how other people in the world are living and that you could really do with a lot less. And I think that was my big takeaway in Portugal, is, like, how much life I was living with so much less, you know, and how I could really live with so much less. I met so many people who were just, like, living in vans and having that van life. I thought it was so dope. I was like, I want to come and get me a Westphalia camper and, like, you know, sell my stuff. So just that concept of, like, less can be more, less can be so much more. And that again, it loops back into that concept of slowing down, because it's like, we think that if we slow down and if we move slower, we're not going to get as much done, you know, and in a place of high productivity where it's always about what your output is, it's counterintuitive, right? But like, I feel like you can do so much more when you do slow down, and get so much more accomplished because you have that focus, you have that that intention and that purpose. So, you know, it's the same with less. It's like when you have less and when you work with less, everything serves its purpose. Everything is really purposeful and everything is really intentional. And so, you know, I think that remembering that you don't need, like, you don't need so much stuff, you know, is important. And I think just in a yoga practice, I think the beauty about the yoga practice, at least in most spaces, is just that you can show up just as you are with what you have, you know, like you don't have to, and I always say this is like, you don't have to be anything other than what you are to show up to this practice. You can show up exactly how you find yourself, you know, at any given time. And that's something that I really love about yoga. And I think something that's important to keep fresh in the mind, because you don't have to come with a certain type of gear. I mean, given you want to be in comfortable clothing, right? So you can move around freely, but for the purpose of being able to move, not for the purpose of looking a certain way. So I think people just need to remember that, and hope, and also like find environments that are welcoming for that. If you're going to a studio where you do feel out of place because it seems like there's more emphasis on looks or on physicality and that doesn't really resonate with you, then maybe you should find another space that has another type of core value at the center. So it's about finding your tribe too, especially, you know, in navigating, like you said, capitalism and what can be like colonized ways of like dealing with yoga and the way that it's presented and sold. You have to really find your space. And sometimes that's at home with a YouTube video, and that's cool too, you know? So yeah, I mean, those are kind of my thoughts around it. You just have to be in tune with yourself and be balanced in your perspectives to be able to see things clearly.
Yeah, I love it. And I love talking, you know, about the idea of knowing what you're up against. I think that's such a, I think so much based in our states of awareness is like knowing what we actually stand to lose or what we actually stand to gain by centering ourselves in those places. And so I think that speaks so clearly to that of like, okay, I'm in this space of awareness. I am noticing what is true for me and what's around. And that conscious observer, which I think can only be fully activated if we slow down enough to notice. And so I think comes back to that sense of noticing. And a lot of this comes to kind of things I've learned through my practice of yoga, of slowing down, of like knowing that it's not like everything isn't the biggest deal ever. Like there's ways to really like let shit go and know that it's not the end of the world or it's not the end of my world if something is going differently than what I planned. I think that's big for me. Something else that's like coming through and coming up for me is, you know, you speak so eloquently of and about yoga, yet don't necessarily have to, I don't know, talk about specific mantras or talk about specific deities or focus yourself on a specific culture that might not necessarily be yours. And, you know, in the world of, you know, especially with teacher training. So like, for example, with teacher trainings, you mostly, you automatically learn the yamas and the niyamas, and there is the limbs of yoga. And it's interesting because when you translate it, there are core values that I think in being a good human or being a cosmic person on this planet are things to come by regardless of the translation. But, you know, not once do I see you mentioning these other cultural aspects of yoga. And I want to kind of just acknowledge that, because I think for me, I have kind of danced between like what is acceptable and great in offering in my yoga classes. Like I say namaste at the end, but then part of me is like, doesn't really use it all the time. You know, oming is an interesting conversation for me too. I really like singing, but in my specific studio, we don't own, like the studio owner doesn't own. So like none of the classes own. And I'm curious about your take on that, of like navigating some of these like really amazing cultural practices. And the difference, I think, of what it comes down to, and Sonali Fisk, which is just this amazing woman who does a lot of stuff around cultural appropriation, talks a lot the difference between like cultural exchange, cultural appreciation, cultural exchange, and then the difference between appropriation, which is the profiting off of a culture, essentially, like a full-blown culture. So I'm curious your lens on that, if you've had to navigate it at all in your own work. Like I say, just in what you offer, like I love, for example, you do the basics of yoga and base spelled B-A-E-S-I-C-S. I think I'm saying that right. Yeah, B-A-E. Yep. And again, like that comes from Black culture or African-American vernacular. It doesn't come from like the post-millennial white person, which I think is sometimes mistaken. People are like, yeah, bae. I'm like, yeah, it's on Instagram, but that like literally means nothing. That's my snarky comment about that. But I'm curious, you know, what's your conversation around it? And yeah, again, like Afro yoga is a movement, you know, it's not just a class. And so what that stands for.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just taking a moment to gather my thoughts before I respond, but
yeah, that was a lot of questions.
No, again, you're good.
My circular thoughts. I'm like, so I have all these questions.
You're a lot like me, so it's all good.
Yeah, I know. Like the Aquarius Sagittarius, we're actually like a pretty great duo. Woo-hoo. Just so everybody knows in
just
the episode,
so they know.
We actually have like a magnetic way that we kind of just get it, which I've noticed most of the people that I have on here, I'm like, wow. So when we actually see each other in real life, we'll be hanging out and going to amusement parks and stuff. I really like amusement parks, so.
Okay, for sure. Yeah, shout out to all Aquariuses and Sagittariuses on the listening side and everybody else too, so they don't feel left out. Yeah, so I know what you mean in about that whole, like, you know, in the teacher training and then you learn about the deities or whatever. We had to do this thing about the deities and report on one specific one and share and blah, blah, blah. I think that the big part that people don't get about cultural appropriation is giving credit where credit is due. That's all people want. And there was an issue here, actually, at the same yoga studio that I got my training at, about this white girl who was doing a rap yoga class, and there was some confrontation and some issues about it. Black Lives Matter got involved. It was a big deal for some time. And another black yoga instructor, he's black and Indian, and I sat and had a conversation. That video is on YouTube. I think it's on my Afro Yoga Facebook page, if anybody wants to look that up. It's really about just giving credit where credit is due. And that's an issue, because when people lose the chain of where something came from, it devalues the origin. And that's what the issue is regarding that. So I think that in any time that you are having what you said, like a cultural exchange or cultural appropriation, the importance around that is like educating people, right? Like educating people on where and why you're using it. I don't own very often, because I feel like for me to feel comfortable doing so, and if I was in a class and I had no idea what OM is and someone's asking me to do that and I don't know what that is or why I'm doing it or what it's about, I won't feel comfortable doing it. I don't like chanting. Chanting's not for me. It's not something that I feel close to or related to. Like it doesn't resonate fully with me. So I would never bring that into a space, you know, because I don't feel comfortable doing it. So I would never bring that. But something like a OM, you know, I often just explain it as like, this is what is called the universal sound of peace, or the sound of the universe vibrating. And we do this together to just bring everybody's energy into harmony, like to bring everybody to the same vibration. You know, like you have to educate people when you're talking about exchanging culture, and using people's culture, you have to define and help people to understand. And sometimes that'll require you to do your own research to figure out, you know, what it is, why, like my spiritual teacher always said this too, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? How does it apply to divine principle? Like and why are you doing something? And having, again, that intention and that purpose behind it. So for me, you know, I do say namaste at the end because I think it's a beautiful way to acknowledge each other. And I do believe in seeing the love and light in one another. And that's something that I've just practiced, you know, on my own before yoga even came around, just like looking and trying to find that love and light in myself and see it in others, which is obviously a work in progress. But, you know, I will only use and do and talk about certain things, especially with my my audience. And this is something that's really important regarding Afro yoga, is like I'm connected to a certain segment of the population, which is mostly Black. And so what sense would it make to have them come through and then speak to them about stuff that they don't relate to? The whole purpose of having Afro yoga is having a space where people can feel related and connected to one another. So it's like, for that to resonate, for that to land, and for it to make sense, it needs to be around that culture. It needs to be something that they can relate to, that they can feel connected to. So I play, you know, I play a lot of R&B, I play hip hop, I play conscious hip hop. Every now and then I sneak a little Drake in there for the fun, you know, like you gotta still be real and be with the culture as it is, you know? And I know that that's part of what my culture digs and what I dig. So that has to be translated through. And I think music, especially for us, is such a big part of the culture, dance and music, that naturally, you know, my playlists, I have a bunch of playlists, Afro yoga playlists that I make, because they need to be curated to the experience of that person. You know what I mean? And I don't often, like, I'm not going to play an Afro yoga playlist at my corporate yoga class. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make sense. So I think that figuring out what makes sense, and not losing your integrity or like your authenticity in the process, you know, like every now and then I'll still play them a little India RE or something, you know, but it's not going to be full blown. And so I try to just be sensitive to like who is in front of me and what it is that they need in order to facilitate the best possible experience in that class. And so if me playing like a little Tom Petty jam, which I'm eclectic, like I like all kinds of music, but if me playing a little Tom Petty or a little Led Zeppelin in a class where I know that the dominant group is going to be related to that, maybe I'll play those jams for them because I know that they can connect into that. You know, but I can think of time and time again where I've been in a class that's predominantly white and I don't like the music, you know, or there's a couple songs I can pick out of there, but like nothing is the music that I listen to. And for me, yoga can really get me into a practice. Like yoga can get me to the next level in a practice. If it's the right sound and the right, you know, motivation for that time, I can really get into it. And so I think, again, because the culture that I serve, the people that I serve are of that demographic, it makes sense for me to cater the experience to them in that way. And something that I love because that's also what I love. So it feels very authentic for me and very just easy and effortless, you know? And they always like, "Ooh, can you pass me that playlist? Blah, 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 blah," you know? So
I was about to say, could you give some Spotify playlist? I'm like, Yes. Cause I grew up in the 90s and like, I was not the kid that liked like grunge rock in the 90s. I was like,
Spice Girls.
Loved my 90s. Yeah. Like Salt-N-Pepa, Spice Girls. I like love J Dilla. He's kind of my like one and all, like that type of instrumental chill hop is like something that I just from a ground bone deep level. And J Dilla is kind of like my other god. Like he's my deity. I would pray to J Dilla like all the time if I could. Just cause creatively, that's the type of music when I flow in yoga that I want to listen to. And it has like even the background music for the for the podcast was off of a, you know, an inspiration of a J. Dilla track. It's not the same, but it was off of that and a Janelle Monáe kind of inspiration too, which is also someone who I basically like was on the tears crying for most of her show because of the amount of just like artistry and pure potency that she carries. And so, you know, I not being Black and Brown, but having like such a deep affinity with Black and Brown music growing up, it's like, it's something that when you say I'm like Tom Petty in a yoga class, I'm like, so much of me is like
repulsive.
You know, I'm very not, I don't have a lot of words. I like DJ Drez. Like I really like that chill hop kind of low tempo. I really like East Forest has been one of my favorites. Like just
Rising Appalachia.
Yeah, it's got that kind of like rootsy, it's got a soul vibe. It's got a vibe that kind of really resonates there for me. But it's funny you say that because I do know a couple yoga teachers that will like be really into classic rock and I'm like, yeah, no.
Not for me.
Yeah, no, I'm the one, my one thing I will say from the studio because, and again, I won't name the studio, but they're very into the levels. Like when you offer a class, it's very based on levels. And, you know, as a studio owner who also teaches a lot at the studio, I can't disagree with that practice of levels. You know, you want a level one, you want a level two. I am and have advocated for the one yoga class that is called Slow Flow. And that's what I do. I do slow flow. And, you know, it goes back to speaking to that. I think I know what the folks who are coming to my class want to have. I know what they're also noticing what they wouldn't enjoy or feel comfortable in having in a class. Like they're not there for the power flow 45-minute vinyasa class. Like they're there to kind of move. They're there to, I like to say, simmer, like cook. They want to be cooked, but they don't need to be like ignited and exhausted. Yeah, like just kind of, yeah, they don't want to come out like that. So I really appreciate you kind of taking your time to talk about this because I think it's such an important conversation. So I just want to thank you for that. And, you know, the last couple of questions I have are kind of more of like what's stirring in Afro yoga, like what, if you have any offerings to talk about, just things that are coming through. You know, if you don't know, and I'm going to tell you so you will, Angie does these amazing little meditative podcasts, little blurbs. And if you've ever heard of Hay House, which are meditation stuff you can find on podcasts. And to be honest, for me, and I told Angie this, having not done a lot of podcasting or been a huge podcast listener that much before starting a podcast, my one go-to, like my must, because if I was in a space or I felt really triggered or I needed to anchor or ground or center in some way, were little meditation mini podcasts. And so some of Angie's are like 5 minutes, 7 minutes. They're like this perfect amount of time for me. Like after work, I'll play one and all of a sudden the day will just change or I'll be wanting to go to a place. I'm noticing as I get older, like I'm like the awkward kid in high school. Like I'm not as socially cool as I thought I was. And so the meditations help me kind of like get back into opening up for my cocoon and getting a little bit more just, am I able to receive energy and also hold my own? I think that's my big thing is navigating my own sense of space and my own container in relationship to other interactions. So yeah, I'm curious, you know, all of you should go listen to the meditation, like little blurbs of the podcast. They're on her link right now on her Instagram. But just other offerings you have coming up. And
yeah, before I answer that, there is one more thing I wanted to touch on from the last question.
Yeah, please.
I think that, you know, regarding like deities and those kinds of things, I think that what I would like for people to take away and something that I'm also recognizing and realizing for myself is that I already have divinity within, that the deity is already here. And I can think of like a quote in the Yamas and Niyamas book, which if you don't have it, like whether you're a yogi or not, you should have it, by Deborah Adele. Amazing book. Maybe you can link that too. there's a quote in there where it talks about God and having created humans, and there's a point by which he's trying to hide himself from them. And so he's thinking about all these different places that he could hide. And he's like, nah, they're resourceful. Like, they're going to find me. They're going to find me there. And then he's like, has this moment where he's like, ah, I know where I'll hide. I'll hide inside of them because they'll never look to find me there. And that, like, ugh, every single time I hear that, it, like, comes right down into my heart, into my belly. Like, we look everywhere and anywhere except for ourselves for the answers, except for ourselves for guidance, for self-assurance, for wisdom, for strength, for all of the things. We look everywhere and anywhere and have not realized that it's all already inside, that it's all already here. And if we can develop the practice of, again, slowing down, meditating, taking the time to connect, that wisdom is there, and it's gonna show up, and it's gonna be heard. That voice is gonna speak to you. And so I think that, you know, my belief is yes in God and a creator that has made all of these incredible things. But like, to know that a piece of that is in you, that you're a part of all of that, you know, that I'm a part of all of that, that you're a part of all of that, that everybody listening is a part of all of that. And that every single one of us has that God within, that goddess within, that divinity within. And so much of, you know, religion and history has taught us to look to someone else to have access to that divinity. That we now feel that it's like egotistical or like wrong or sinful to think that we could actually have God within or have a goddess within. And we have to reclaim that. And so I say that just to say that, you know, we can talk about all these deities and we can talk about all of the things and all of the, you know, the idols and all of these different things that can be brought up, or things that, you know, songs that we could sing to certain gods or goddesses or whatever. But really it's about singing to that part that of you, you know, singing to that part of you, like whatever that god or goddess represents. For example, in Eastern Indian philosophy, it's like it's a part of you, you know, it's a representation of something that is already you. And so not looking so much outside of the self, but realizing that all of the things that you need are already here. If you actually take the time to get to know yourself, if you actually take the time to meditate, if you actually take the time to slow down and ask yourself in this moment, like, how am I? How am I really? You know, we spend so much time asking people, how are you? How are you? Oh, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm fine. And I'm guilty of this too. But like, how am I really in this moment? How am I feeling, and where am I holding that? And this is something that I've, again, learned with my spiritual teachers, like, how am I feeling? Where am I holding it in my body? And then I work to release it, you know, and work to let it go. So that's just something that I think is important, and something that, that again, I think is so beautiful about this practice and yoga, meaning union, you know, that connection with self. And what this is really all about is getting to that place of self-realization, to realize yourself and what that really is. So I just needed to drop that. But, have something.
In every sense of the word, I'm like, I want to like scream and like shout, and then I might mess up the mic. Thank you. I'm just like, So much of the idea of self-realization, I think, is such a key point of yoga. Because at the end of the day, it's all about coming back home to who we are. And I think coming back home to that inner garden, I mean, I go back to that idea and that resonance of the garden imagery, but I really think of it as just like, we're here, and there is so much that we look to outside of ourselves in order to make ourselves whole again. And so I think the idea, and a huge part of this podcast for me, was how we have conversations with ourselves, all the many pieces, all the many fragments, all the many parts of ourselves, in order to recognize that it's all those parts that make us who we are. And it's those parts that make us reveal our gifts, right? It's those parts that make us reveal our fears. It's like so prismatic and has so many different lenses and layers to look at. And so the way that you just so eloquently laid it down of just like, it is about coming back home to that self-realization about who we are and that the inner divinity of that. And I think to know that we are a living miracle. And I think the universe knows that and exists within inside of us. And that to me, I really hold with such deep respect of others and seeing others on that as well. Because when we both know that we hold God, then it's like when we're together, it magnifies that relationship of us feeling the divinity within each other. And so.
So much so.
Thank you. Thank you, Angie. I'm like, that was amazing to hear. You know, it's just, and again, imagery, I'm like a big imagery person, but seeing like a golden sphere that comes from the center of your chest and like radiates out like sunbeams. That was kind of my first image of just this like really beautiful, like golden, like super bronze, like sphere that radiates out from the center of your chest.
That's beautiful. And gold, you know, is a representative of wisdom, you know, and that's what, you know, that's where we want to get to. You know, the wise always have few words, they listen more, but they spend a lot of time in silence, you know, and they speak when it's necessary and when it's, and with intentional, every single word is intentional. And I just think that embodies everything we've been talking about, the humility, the slowing down, the listening, the tuning in. It's all of that, you know, and being able to when you're at that place, you can radiate that wisdom. You can radiate that light in such a powerful way and really have impact and recognize those who are carrying the same light, you know. And of course, when everyone's shining, we're shining bright, like, it's everywhere. You know, that light is shining bright. So it is great to be able to connect with others who are on that path, because, you know, you can help support each other and lift each other up in that, and continue to shine. So, all right. So, yeah, so the meditation podcast is cool, and I want to definitely big up, my team, Charisse, Michaela, Tiana, and Kirsten, who all participate or have participated on contributing to a segment. And so when we come on, you'll hear whoever's hosting for that particular episode to come on. And that came out of an inspiration from a survey that I did, because I was seeing a lack of attendance. And, you know, it's also like a real, like, I don't, it could be also like a cultural thing, B, a location thing. But Sacramento and where I'm at is a town that really loves new stuff. And so when that newness fades away, there can sometimes be a lag of like continued participation. And so that's part of what, you know, in that first whole question of like how I can keep people engaged and what I can do to keep them, you know, in the practice in some way, right? Even if they don't show up physically. And that's one of the things that I've been thinking about, and not only like making things accessible to people that are not here in Sacramento, well, that are here in Sacramento, but also that are not here in Sacramento, is moving my work into a digital space. And so the meditation podcast is kind of like the first sort of swing at that. And I wanted to I call it a vibe in five. It's like 5-minute meditation. It's really just a matter of giving you like a quick dose, something you can digest really easily. You know, we have a short time span, a short attention span in the West. And so it's just a matter of like getting you into a quick little meditation where you can, you know, ground or choose a particular meditation that's calling to you and whatever it is that you need at that time. And, you know, just like just something to keep you going, something to keep you level. And so we have one that debuts every week, usually like on Sunday or Monday, a new episode will pop up. And I send it in the newsletter on the email, which people can subscribe to on the afroyoga.org website. And then I also have just a podcast page on the website where I upload and you can just look through and listen to it. It's really easy access. It's on from the Anchor app, but it's also like on iTunes or whatever. And it's just Afro Yoga, so you could find it that way. It was just a matter of just trying to give people a little a little inspiration, a little support. And it's so cool to actually hear that, because you never know who's on the other side listening, you know what I mean? So it's always so cool to be like, oh, someone's actually, like, I could see how many people played it, but I don't know who or where or how or why. And so it's cool to hear, and it's super affirming to hear you say, like, yeah, I listen to this after work, and, like, it puts me in a different space, because that's exactly what it's intended to do. So it's super affirming to hear that is being received in that way. So thank you for listening to it.
Yeah, keep listening. And it's really easy to find, which is always, like, so nice when you can go around. You know, another thing for Angie, like, and she's gonna might talk about this too, but if you just kind of look at her page, like, everything has this, like, very sacred place. And, like, you know, a lot of you kind of know, like, I'm a little type A, but I'm very creative. I'm a very creative type A, I'd like to say. And she, like, her ability to use, like, the aesthetics and design while also making something feel really approachable. Sometimes people do design and I'm like, this is too clean. It's, like, too neat. It's like, I don't know if the person, like, has any stuff because it's too clean. I have stuff. So I'm like, yes. So it's interesting to notice the, like, when she just, all of the things and the, even just the guides and the things that you offer on your Instagram, just the design elements are just so amazing and just really quality work. So I was wondering if you wanted to speak a little bit to the design world too, and what you offer.
Yeah. So Afro Yoga itself is, like, these three components. It's classes, community, and then, well, consulting and or creative consulting, right? So, like, the classes are just, like, what's offered. A lot of them donation-based. Community has to do with, like, collaborations in the community, partnerships with other individuals and businesses. Like, Lululemon and I are doing some really dope stuff, and I'm super grateful for their support. They've been really supportive of Afro Yoga and just, like, super here for, like, how they can help to move it forward. So shout out to them. And then also the creative consulting piece, which is, like, my design ability and wanting to offer that. And so in my bigger master plan of things, it's like, I want to be able to offer yoga teacher trainings, Afro yoga teacher trainings, which will happen. And so once that happens, I wanted to be able to support, like, be able to use a conduit that for me is something that comes naturally to me, my ability to be creative. Like, I want to use that, right, in a way that that can not only, like, benefit others, but also make me money, because design is an area that is lucrative if you have the clients and you're good at what you do. But, like, also just to support, like, a new yoga teacher in figuring out what is my brand about, and how do I get that out there in a way that is quality, because I will not stand by something that doesn't look qualitative to me. Like, it has to look super quality. Like, I've always been quality over quantity, from, like, my mom instilling that into me, just in the things that I buy. Like, that's just how I live. I live organic. Like, I buy leather. Like, you know, like, I buy shit that's gonna last me. And so I just move in that way. Like, I've always been about quality. So I know that for me, anything that I touch related to creating design or any graphics all have to meet a certain standard for me. And I'm lucky enough that I have the creativity, and I'm completely self-taught. Like, I didn't go to any type of design school or anything. I use Canva a lot and some things that make it easier for me, but I'm totally self-taught in the things that I do, and I'm navigating back to Photoshop now and figuring some of that out. But, like, you know, I wanted to be able to, in that bigger master plan of things, to be able to offer yoga teachers the ability to have support in their business aspect, because that's just you get a little bit of it in a yoga teacher training, but you have no idea. Like, the way that the yoga thing is set up, and I knew this from when I left teacher training, that I didn't want to just go teach at a yoga studio. Like, I knew that was not what I wanted to do. I was very, very, very clear about that. Because A, you're making crumbs, you know, like, to be real, you're making crumbs for what you're doing. You're getting paid $20, $25, maybe $30, $35 if you're an experienced teacher for an hour class or 75-minute class, where you're pouring your soul into that class and into those people. It's there's a lot of emotional labor, a lot of creativity, a lot of planning that goes into all of that is not is not compensated properly, in my opinion. And I know that yoga studio owners probably also, like, it's competitive and they all have, everybody's got to figure out a way to balance. So I get it. But like, what I really wanted to do is create something that's independent. And I teach at one yoga studio. They reached out to me to teach a class there. But like all the other classes, I rent space in the places that I teach and I pay them their percentage. And that's how I roll, because I wanted to create something that was different. And I really do believe in like the idea of a teacher having a specific type of offering, something that they're known, something that's like serious, that's like them, that's like their thing, you know. I have one of my teachers on my team, Tiana. Her thing is like yin yoga, like that's her thing, you know, that's what speaks to her soul. So we're working on figuring out the branding and like how we present that for you, you know, that slowing down, that slow gentle yoga, gentle flow, that's like your thing, you know. So it's, I think that it's important to like recognize that individuality in each yoga teacher and what they offer, because we all have unique offerings and what we give. And so my thought, you know, with sort of building that creative branch, which we'll expand later, is to really be the opportunity to support, to teach people how to do those different things, so that they can be successful in their yoga business. For right now, since we're not yet at that point, that offering is there for anyone who needs assistance with figuring out how to create branding for themselves, or what that even means. What is branding, and how do I even, what is the first step of that, right? Like, what does that even mean? Then there's, you know, web design support. So like I create websites, and all, you know, the custom layout and design for all of that, using the branding that we would create either together or whether you create it and then you let me know like, hey, this is what I dig. So there's a process that I go through with the client depending on what they want. You know, people that want branding kits, I've designed like workbooks for people and business cards and all those kinds of things. But one thing I really love is the web design. Like that's one of my favorite things. And creating graphics, you know, attractive flyers and things like that. I get excited. Like I'll meet with the client and they're like, yeah, this is my concept. And I'll just start thinking about like what the website might look like. Or when I see a template, I'm just like, oh, this is going to kill it. Like, so I get really stoked about it. And that's my creative part of me like flowing. So I really love my design work, because it's been a way for me to have a gateway to like express myself in a way that's really natural for me, in a way that just flows well for me. And it's funny because I had a reading with an astrologer like many years ago, and she's like, you might want to think about going into graphic design, blah blah blah. And she talked to me about like, instead of trying to fit into these different boxes, you know, to make money or whatever, figure out who you are and then find where you fit in, like what kind of work fits into who you are. And that's what's sustainable, you know. And I think that's why this yoga thing, because I always, you know, I've had like probably 10 or 12 jobs in my life, never really had one for too long, because after a while I got bored. It didn't sustain for me. But with yoga and with the design work and with the community stuff, it's stuff that like is me, that's representative of who I am. And so it makes it sustainable. It makes it exciting for me. It makes it where I'm thinking, I'm up at night thinking about trying to shut my brain down from all the ideas that I have. I'm sure you know well how that goes.
I know. I'm like, yes, as you can see, I'm nodding my head in complete agreement of it. Cause it's like so true. When you think of it, it's like, you know, the saying, you can never work a day in your life if you really love what you do. Like you never feel like it's work, you know? And so with event work and just with producing, and again, it's like, you know, there's other things that I think I'm excited to do with my life, as work, as things to put in the world. And I'm also getting really okay with being, you know, comfortable as is and not needing to do more, like not needing to like know what's next or what like can happen after, or kind of continuing again that need of like production or moving or progression more so, as we mentioned a little bit in the beginning. And so, yeah, I can really relate to that. And I'm excited because I am in that phase of this work, of the podcast, where like I have an idea of things I want to offer, but I want to just kind of see how they flow into the greater conversation of the people that I'm working with, of the greater conversation of the podcast, which is why the podcast was so great, because it was like this open canvas of creation, that came from essentially me wanting to have conversation, me wanting to spark connectivity with people, and me wanting to scratch layers and questions that are not just on this kind of like surface level base. So, which I think we did.
You asked really great questions. I've had a couple different interviews and whatever, but you have some really, really deep questions that are very below the surface level, like really, really farther beyond, which I really appreciate, because real conversation needs to happen, like real, not just like, oh, how did it start and what do you want to do? And, you know, like those questions are all good and well too. And like just having an overall concept and idea of like, what is this all about? Right. But what's really the conversation beyond that? And I really appreciate that, because I feel like I said, just like real ass conversations, you know, and we all know when we're hearing a real ass conversation and when we're hearing some surface level BS, and for me, and I think more and more increasingly, especially with the millennials coming through, like we want to feel and hear and see like real shit. People are tired of the fake. And so I can really, like I said, just appreciate, you know, the stream of questions and their intention. You know, I feel like they were really dope.
Support for The Witch's Muse can be found through Patreon/The Witch's Muse. Have an opportunity to dive into extended content, guided visualizations, monthly question and answers, and a look behind what it takes to make The Witch's Muse. Any tier is welcome, from your cup of compassion all the way to your creatrix community. So find something for yourself or for a friend. Look forward to seeing you on there. Patreon.com/The Witch's Muse.